Welcome to IATDG's first podcast, a members-only event. Today is August 2nd, 2018, and we welcome Elizabeth Getch today to speak about developing interesting commentary. I'm Karen Yates, IATDG's Community Manager, and your host for today's event. Currently working as a tour director in the United States, Elizabeth Getch has been working in the field of interpretation for over 10 years. Once a park ranger for the United States National Park Service, Elizabeth traded her flat hat for cowboy boots and took over the management of a walking tour company of downtown Nashville. Her experiences include creating new tours and talks, researching content to enhance current tours, training new guides to best engage with audiences, and creating interpretive toolkits for seasonal employees. She graduated with her bachelor's degree in history from New Mexico State University and her master's degree in public history from Middle Tennessee State University. She is the author of Wicked Nashville and the upcoming book, Lost Nashville. Elizabeth, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy tour schedule today to talk with us.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate it. So as Karen mentioned, my name is Elizabeth Getch, and I have worked as a tour director leading groups of people on week-long trips for 5 seasons. And prior to that, like Karen said, I managed a walking tour company for several years, leading tours for a variety of groups of people and training new guides. And so I've worked with students and older groups and then just a mix of the public in general. And before working in the private sector, I did serve as a park ranger for the United States National Park Service in interpretation, or I'd like to tell people a storytelling park ranger. The focus of my studies have been history. I have 2 degrees in history, and I've written and published 2 history books. And I am absolutely fascinated with how places tell stories. What can a place say? What do landscapes tell us? And don't worry, I'll talk more about landscapes as a commentary tool later. So as Karen mentioned, I'm going to spend some time talking about how to enhance commentary for tour guides and tour directors. My favorite technique from my imaginary interpretive toolbox is asking questions. I ask my guest questions, I ask visitor questions, I ask local guides questions and park rangers questions. My friends at a bar know I ask them questions. I ask myself questions. Questions help me keep thinking. Questions keep helping me find answers and more information. So during this podcast, I do intend on posing many questions. You don't necessarily have to know the answers, but I'm hoping that they will provide you tools that can help point you in directions to start pulling out more information and pull out your own story that's going to help enhance your own commentary. So if you spend any time in the business, you will likely know that cultivating quality commentary takes time. Enhancing that commentary takes even more time. Consider this your craft. Right? Consider this a skill set. In many times and places throughout the world, individuals who wanted to work a certain craft would be members of a guild as a means to learn. They would start as an apprentice, maybe become a journeyman before they'd eventually become a master. You'd almost consider IATGG, the International Association of Tour Directors and Guides, as this guild, right? And historically, butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers might be examples of craftsmen. In our case, tour directors and tour guides are these apprentices to craftsmen. So historically, these individuals would train for years, spending many hours a day learning their craft, training their craft. These things are not learned overnight. It takes a lot of time and practice and revisiting the same skill set over and over again. I would argue providing quality commentary is a skill that can be learned and honed and developed and cultivated. And it's not going to be done overnight. It takes time to set up a foundation and then build upon that foundation. And so I would encourage not just listening to this podcast, but then taking some time to think about the questions that I offer and to fill in your own answers according to whatever destination it is where you work. My job here is just to enhance whatever foundation you might have in place. You might have outstanding commentary. We're just going to take some time to think about how you can possibly enhance it for the guest experience. So how do we start? What are methods for individuals to develop commentary? I think that's the basic, right? So I'll just spend a little bit of time just thinking about what basic commentary is first basics include the easy vital foundation, right? So the who, the what, the when, the where, and maybe some hows about a place. So we break this down, right? And then we'll go, and then we'll talk about the other types of things beyond the who, what, when, where, and hows to be able to expand and enhance this commentary. So if we break this down, pretend we're going to visit the Grand Canyon. I send tours out in national parks out west. The Grand Canyon is one of the destinations in which we go. So I'm going to use it as a example a couple of times this afternoon. So what is it? A hole in the ground, right? Or if you want to be finicky, it is an erosional feature, not just a hole. Where is it? Northern Arizona in the United States. As for the when, you have a little bit of room to discuss the millions or billions of years of geology represented, or you can discuss the nearly 100 years of the National Park Service's involvement, since a lot of people visit the actual national park itself. And that question of who provides several opportunities to expand in many different directions, and we'll come back to that. Who were the ancients who lived there? Who were the more recent natives who lived there? Who were the earliest of white explorers? John Wesley Powell is probably the most prominent of those examples. Who helped create the park itself? And how about those features we see, the buildings? Who helped create those? What other beings exist outside of humans? These are all our who. Then you have why, which we'll get to a little bit later. Because I think what we can do, even with this basic set of information, is expand upon this, right? So you chart this out. And if you're driving in your car, I would encourage you not to chart this out right now while you're listening. But if you're sitting down taking notes, right, you chart out the who, write down a column for who, the what, the where, then when, then why. And actually, I'll just use this as an example. We're going to take our who. Under who, we can further go on within who, what, when, where, and why. So we'll say, as the example, who are these earliest of white explorers? John Wesley Powell is going to be an example. So who is John Wesley Powell? A former soldier? Make a note. An explorer? Make a note. When did he come out here? He came out after the American Civil War, in the 1870s, 1880s. What did he do? Not only did he come down the Colorado River, being the first white English-speaking settler to document what he saw, he did it twice. Why was this important? It is the first exposure to this massive white population on the eastern seaboard to this massive landscape. He's going to start kind of giving glimpses of this wonderful place that we now call the Grand Canyon. So then we can even take that further, who, what, when, where, why is still, we're going to push that one to the side. We're going to talk about that later. When he talk about who, when we say, who is John Wesley Powell, you could spend time on a commentary, even though you're talking about a place, about talking about his biography. John Wesley Powell was a former Civil War soldier. During the Battle of Shiloh, he lost his arm. So when he floats down the Colorado River, he does it with one arm, going down the raging Colorado River. So how would that impact your story? How would that tell your story? It gives maybe folks a chance to realize that other people have overcome things that in life, right? So that's one aspect. Who is John Wesley Powell? When we say explorer, what does an explorer mean? In this particular case, he's a physical explorer, but he's also an intellectual explorer. He takes time to document and get to know various native tribes in what we now call Arizona and Utah. So he's taking time to further document and research these individuals that live in these groups of people that live in the American West, ultimately coming back, helping set up the National Geographic Society, helping set up the Ethnographic Bureau in the Smithsonian. So he has so much more of a story that reaches far beyond the Grand Canyon and gives us an opportunity to talk about him. And if you're trying to find connections in the landscape, aside from the National Park Service, and all their signs everywhere, there's little kind of photos here and there about him and references here and then there about him. The whole Lake Powell, which is a couple hours drive away, a part of the Colorado River, is named after him. So you have lots of connections to be able to talk about. You have the Grand Canyon, and you can further share a story about an individual with all these different tidbits, that sort of thing, by asking you these questions and then finding something and further asking these same questions: who, what, when, where, and why. If we were to revisit that same question, we go back thinking about who helped create the park, right? Who helps create a park? And that, just basically posing that question to your guests and the kind of getting people's feedback as far as what they know, what they don't know, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later, is a helpful way to enhance commentary. So rather than just going on just maybe the basics of geology or the weather or and how dry or how hot some place is, you can expand further by saying, who are some of the earliest people who came out here? It's hot today, but how do you suppose they survived when it was 1910 and they didn't have air conditioning? What do you suppose they ate? And further kind of talk about whether it's the Harvey girls that worked in the actual El Tovar there at the Grand Canyon, or the earliest of the Wranglers who helped with those mule trains. What did they do? How did they live? And you might be wondering, Elizabeth, how am I supposed to know this information? Aside from asking park rangers and local guides, this goes back to that honing your craft or honing your skill. Reading is going to be very important in developing commentary. Reading not just what's on the internet, because there is some good information on the internet, but finding books, reading history books, asking a park ranger, what do you think is a great body of literature for this particular place? And asking a local volunteer, asking, what was a really good book that helped you understand better about this place? And so it goes back in your off season. It's really helpful to just continue learning about these places and about these people who lived in these places and continually educating. And I will already applaud you for knowing that you're continually educating yourself by being a member of IATDG. So one of my go-tos in engaging my audiences is asking them, what do you know? What do you think you know? What does pop culture tell us about X, Y, and Z? So I might ask that question going into the Grand Canyon. What do you know? What do you think you know? Or what does pop culture tell us about the Grand Canyon? And I will get a mix of bags of responses. People like to make the joke, well, I know it's grand because it's called the Grand Canyon. You might get people who have some authority on this subject. They are familiar with, to some extent, maybe the history or the geology, or they've did some reading before. I try not to fall into asking questions with a hard correct answer or an absolute yes or no question answer in this commentary portion of my engagement with my guests. If I ask, how long is the Grand Canyon, and the guest guesses wrong, then you've maybe made that guest feel that they don't want to share again, right? They're not willing, they're not ready to share again. You haven't created a safe space. Instead, the question is, this question of what do you know, think we know, or what does pop culture tell us, gives us a couple of different opportunities for further enhancing our interaction with our guests. One, you'll have guest interaction. Two, you learn where your guests are coming from. And three, this question set is a tool for you ultimately to continue cultivating this commentary, to continue enhancing your commentary. What myths emerge? What consistent answers come up? What do guests know that you didn't know, and that now you have an opportunity to research while adding to your own toolkit? Let's break this down. So one, I said, this provides an opportunity for guest interaction. Guests want to be engaged, and it is sometimes so hard to just sit and listen. I am guilty of this. I have a very hard time focusing with just listening. I try. I very much so try. But I do much better if I know I have an opportunity to potentially engage. Your guests will know that if they know they have an opportunity to share, they will be more likely to listen. If you consistently set up your commentary in a format that allows guests to share from time to time, they will be more apt to stay in tune with you rather than zone out and kind of fall into their own mind. open-ended questions are really good for this. Creating opportunities for guests to share what they know is good for this. You might be able to set it up where you ask the question and have them share directly back to you if you're on the coach. You might open this up and just be ready and say, share across the aisle with a partner, share with your traveling companion. And that way it gives us a little more interaction. I personally, with this particular question, like to open it up to the coach, like to open it up to the bus and ask and get that feedback so I know where I'm coming from. And this leads us to point number two. You can learn where your guests are coming from. Every group is different, right? Everybody's exposure has been different. So you can adapt your commentary slightly as needed when you hear from your guests. What if all of their answers are totally off base? What if they're just coming out of left field? You have no idea where they're getting this. You get to start from square one and you can help them. You're laying the correct information out. But what if they share with you information that you already may include in your commentary? I think that's actually super helpful because it's kind of like a re-solidification of your commentary. And I like to acknowledge my guests that actually shared their answers. So during my commentary, as Mary mentioned, the Grand Canyon is now a national park and has been since 1919. And that lets Mary know that I was listening to her and it makes her feel like she's contributed. I already knew the answer. It was a part of my commentary, but it helps enhance the guest experience. You can even further expand this for more interaction opportunities. Be prepared with a follow-up kind of question. As Mary mentioned, the Grand Canyon is now a national park and has been since 1919. What makes this park so special that it was saved as early as 1919? Open it up. Let's see. What do people think? Why do people think it's a special place? The third point that I mentioned was that it's a method to continue to cultivate your own commentary. You don't necessarily have to cultivate it in that moment, but people might ask you a question you don't know. I know. It is scary to think you don't know an answer, but that's okay. You don't have to. What if a guest asks you a question you don't answer? It's a bingo. It's a golden opportunity to dig into a different angle or an element about a place that you may have been sharing about for years. You don't know this answer. You have to be willing to say, I don't know. Somebody recently asked me a question about the Snake River in Wyoming, and we were floating on the Colorado River in Arizona, and I had to tell them, I don't know. But it also ultimately provided me with thoughts about why they thought about the Snake River, how was the Snake River connected to the Colorado River, what were the contrasts, what were the similarities, and ultimately it gave me just a little opening into their mind. Why were they thinking about the Snake River when we were actually floating on the Colorado River? So it gives you, what I tend to do when somebody asks me a question I don't know is I say, I don't know. I don't make stuff up. It doesn't help your credibility much because they have access to Google too. So what I like to do is say, that is a good question. I don't know. But if you remind me, I'm going to see what I can do to investigate and see if I can't come up with an answer for you. Depending on the question type, guests will often say, well, I have the ability to look it up myself, and they will do so. But I'll try and make a note somewhere for me to revisit that question because it's going to give me the opportunity to be able to answer it again in the future. It will give me the opportunity to research further, and oftentimes people coming from different backgrounds have different perspectives on things. So when they ask a different type of question, that gives you an opportunity to investigate maybe things you haven't thought about that you could pull into your commentary later. So let's expand now thinking about how audience reacts. Why has your audience come to this place that you were visiting? You want to make sure you're tapping into their desires if possible. So it doesn't, when people are coming to these places for a reason, you should have a rough idea of these reasons. So prior to the tour, even if you've never given this tour before, you should have maybe a rough idea of why people go to a particular place. It doesn't hurt to ask your own friends and family what they know about a place you're about to visit. Even posting a question, the same question, what do you know, think you know, or pop culture tell you about this particular place, post that on social media, see what kind of feedback your friends and family give you, and that's going to maybe be a good start for representation of what to expect when you ask this in an actual public place, and you ask this on an actual tour. From an example I'm going to use from my own experience, how this entire question helped me and it's define my own commentary or help shift my commentary over the years. It happens when I'm working in Utah. I ask my guests, what do you know, think you know, or does pop culture tell you about the state of Utah? And ultimately, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or the Mormons almost always come up, 95% of the time comes up. But how it comes up varies. What people know varies. And I find that most people's only exposure had been from television shows perpetuating stereotypes of extremists. Few knew any legitimate history of the influence of the Mormon immigration of the West. Few knew any real solid information about Mormonism today. Asking this question, I had set up my own commentary to just kind of approach it from a historical standpoint. Here's the cut and dry piece of information when I first designed my commentary for this tour. And sure enough, as I'd ask this question, I start getting these myths that keep coming up, and it provides me with knowing I need to address those. I need to meet my guests where they're coming from. And if they're coming from the only information they know is what they see on television, I have to address it. And I don't want to necessarily say wrong, point out a guest, wrong. But you do want to offer the truth to the best of your ability and combat that. So one way I combat myths in general, wherever it is I'm traveling, I say, so it sounds like you're familiar with these shows that reveal how some families practice polygamy. A lot of people watch these shows. I want to help that guest feel like they're not alone in their current understanding by acknowledging they are a part of a culture who watches and consumes shows. I don't want them to feel alone or isolated, right? Lots of people have this misunderstanding. Lots of people think that way. But I'm going to go on and I'll expand about, in this particular case, this term Mormon, and it might be tossed around on television, but the official church, as it stands, does not recognize the practice that is promoted on the television show. On all adult tours, I'll even use the opportunity to share some of the history, not to glorify or speculate or make the history something like a freak show of a circus act. I'm trying to share how different cultures and subcultures have different beliefs with their own understandings and their own reasoning. And I'm doing this in a way that meets the guests at their needs, right? Meets them where they are. It provides them opportunities to learn. It provides them an opportunity to connect to a place. And that's just one example, right? You can do this many different cases all over the world. I'll say this too. Places tell stories, not just people. Places tell stories. So we have our who, what, when, where's, and ultimately those whys. And I think when we say who, what, where, right, you just think of a place. So if I just say, well, the Grand Canyon's in Arizona, but then we really kind of can take a moment to expand further. What do we mean by Arizona? What does Arizona even mean? How long has Arizona even been called Arizona? Why is it called Arizona? Why are there geographical boundaries there today? Who was in Arizona prior to it being part of the United States? And you start asking all these questions, start digging in. Then you even have this opportunity to do so by looking at maps, right? Maps are a really good way to help kind of think about places. Why do we even have maps? Why were the geographical boundaries established in the first place? What stories can a map tell us? One of the micro focuses of mine in graduate school was the concept of cultural landscape. The cultural landscape encompasses both how humans interact with their space as well as how the environment impacts humans. When people travel, when our guests travel, I think part of the allure of visiting somewhere different is to experience how others live in this different environment. What does this new place tell? What does this place tell about people? What does this place, why is this place special? And when you're helping guide people through an area, you're going to have to consider, how is this place going to be different from where they're from? Why is this place special? And you can choose how expansive of an idea you want to play with it, right? So an example might be the desert itself. Why the desert? What about the desert is special? How is the desert, living in the desert, a unique experience, either today? How about historically? How did people farm in the desert? How did they settle communities? Where did they find water? What might have one looked for water 150 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago? So it's going to be a very different experience than, say, you know, back east, where rivers and lakes and water is not as near as big of an issue as somebody who lives in Arizona. Or you can think on a small scale, a micro scale, right? So I worked at a battlefield in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, called Stones River National Battlefield, south of Nashville. On that battlefield, there lived a former enslaved community after the American Civil War. Upwards, hundreds, at one point nearly 2,000 people lived on this plot of land that was once part of the actual battlefield during the war. Now, why did they live there physically? Why this spot? Why is this place special? And really, the landscape helps tell the story. So military historians will focus on the landscape itself because of the battle and how the landscape impacts the battle. So if you walk through the landscape, you might actually notice that it's a very rocky landscape. There's a lot of limestone outcroppings. There's a lot of shallow places with very little topsoil. So why did a formerly enslaved community start here? If we start looking at it, it's not very good for farming. The land itself holds no physical value, no monetary value. So what better place to put a group of formerly enslaved people than this place that has very little value? Ultimately, so it's again, that the landscape's telling us a part of the story. It's feeding a part of the history. The story that plays out on the landscape is this community that grows and it embodies the idea of freedom after the American Civil War. It lives out for several decades before the National Park Service took over. And so walking landscapes, walking these micro places, right? Walking a place is helpful. Reflecting in a landscape, reflecting in a place that you're visiting is helpful. Take time to pause wherever you're visiting and just think about these things. How do people live here? Why do people live here? Why did people live here? Even in the middle of a city, I could challenge, stop and just consider a city. Before all of those massive buildings were there, what was there? Before those buildings were there, any of the buildings were there, what do you suppose that landscape looked like? How did people get there? Was it a river? Is it a road? What physical challenges would early people have had coming and going to that particular spot? Maybe what advantages did that landscape provide to these groups of people? These are all questions that you could ask for yourself for further investigation, for digging up into research. These are questions that you could even pose to your guests. Get them to think about it. Let their imaginations run wild. And I would also challenge, don't forget the fields. Connecting with guests on an emotional level is vital. Anthony Bourdain said something, and I'm loosely quoting him, "It is an irritating reality that some places and events defy description." So if an experience defies description, how can you enhance the guest's memory of it? Emotions, right? You're touching their heart. When leaving a place, I have taken to asking guests, how did X, Y, and Z make you feel? For example, how did the Grand Canyon make you feel? And then just pause. Let the guests think. Maybe let them share. You can maybe set it up so they can share amongst each other, or just have them share with you. How did the Grand Canyon make you feel? There's not a right or wrong answer with that. And it lets them kind of get in tune with their experience. And it re-solidifies that experience, because ultimately when they walk away, another part of travel is memory. They want to look back and think about not just what they've learned, but what they've experienced and how they've connected. They kind of come full circle. You've had these neat stories. You've investigated some things. You've challenged their imagination. But ultimately, you've asked them, how did this place make you feel? How did the experience make you feel? Now, practice is going to be vital to this whole thing. Again, going back to the idea that we are more or less all apprentices of varying levels. We're all on this journey. We all want to be master tour directors. We all want to be master tour guides. We'll get there eventually, but practice is key. Continually honing your craft is key. Research is a part of it. Practicing is a part of it. Whether you practice at home in front of family, whether you have an opportunity when you're on your off season to practice either with a paid gig or a volunteer gig, practicing in front of a group of people, and then be ready to just keep on practicing it with your guests. Not every group is going to respond the same way. Not every tour is going to feel like a stellar tour. These skill sets require honing and practice and ultimately just getting back up on that horse every single day and trying again. Just because your set of skill sets or style of engaging didn't work on one group doesn't mean it's going to work on the next group. So I think I have seen it happen with tour directors and tour guides, my local tour guides. They had a negative experience when they attempted to try something new, but they didn't want to try it again with a new group. What if they have the same negative experience? What if the group doesn't absorb it the same way? What if they get a bad reaction? I don't live in the past. Here I am talking about history, and I'm telling you not to live in the past. But I'm saying shake off those negative feelings and don't carry them on to your next group. Try it again. Give it a shot. Be confident in yourself. You are their director. You are their guide. You're there to help them share this experience of travel together. You have the information to be able to help them with this. Even if it's not from week to week, from one group to the next, maybe you had a bad day. Don't let your group intimidate you the next day, right? Shake it off. The next day, try again. I've had many groups. It's a different world right now as far as society goes. I've had many groups that seemed cold or non-receptive early in the tour, but by the end, warmed up to me and my style of engaging. And I've found, like in recent tours, I've found that maybe it's because of social media and, you know, the screen is a visual distraction. Headphones are an audio distraction. And so it can be very difficult to talk to a group of 45 people and feel like only five are even listening. But I continually set up this idea of presenting information and engaging with them, offering questions where that they can engage or posing questions that they can think about, trying to get them to engage with me. And by the end of the tour, I have seen a turnaround where I have people who are wanting to listen because they want to feel involved in that commentary as well. So it's not easy. I would argue it is absolutely worth it. It helps your guests. It elevates their experience. It enhances your own tour as well. I could probably go on and on, but my time is about up. And I would like to thank Karen for hosting me and IATDG for giving me this opportunity to share about just enhancing the tour with what I feel are some minor tools from our toolkit. But I'd like to thank them very much.
Well, we really appreciate the insight to your process today, Elizabeth, and our members should have a lot to consider as they put together their next tour commentary. So thank you again for providing such a great first podcast for us. And thank you for taking the time today to join us and take advantage of your IATDG member benefits and to invest in your continuing education. We hope you found it beneficial and would be happy to receive feedback if you'd like to send it to info@iatdg.org. Thank you again and happy travels all.